Hey everyone, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce. We are back for another in our Fix It series, and today we are taking on the biggest challenge in baseball. Can the Colorado Rockies be fixed? Okay, I think we could start with just saying no, we're good. We can't. Yeah. Sorry.
End
in
the
podcast, in a video. No, but we're not going to do that, obviously. But at the same time, I would say that this is the most daunting challenge. Obviously, the Colorado Rockies, they weren't just the worst team in Major League Baseball in 2025. They were arguably the worst team of all time. I know that they had a better record, but they also had the worst run differential. Anytime you start using the words Richmond Spiders, you know that if you have any comparison to them, any way mentioned with them, that's just a gaping black hole, smoldering black hole of disaster that you are talking about. And that was your 2025 Rockies. It's even worse, to be honest, because this wasn't a team like we've had teams in recent years, right? The Astros basically, and the Orioles after them, and a couple of other teams tanked in a way where it was like, look, we're going to be terrible. We're going to suck up all the top picks with that, and then we're going to turn it around. The Rockies were this bad this year, knowing that the highest that they could pick was 10th because they were in the lottery. They've been in the lottery, and they knew they could not win. They could not be a top any more than a 10th pick. So they knew going into this year, this was not a year where they were tanking. This was a year where they were trying, and they produced, again, one of the worst seasons we've ever seen in the major leagues. And Jeff, as we record this, it only has gotten worse. And that's where I think we have to start here, which is John Heyman. We had seen the reporting over the weekend into yesterday. The two finalists that we had heard of, Matt Forman and Amiel Sadai, have both are out. John Heyman reporting today that one of the two, we do not know which one, but one of the two turned down the offer and the other backed out before they got to that stage. I do not have any way to spin that, to explain that, to theorize on that, Jeff, that's not bad for the direction of the Rockies when you have two people. Not you were shooting for the moon and Theo Epstein said, thanks, but I've done enough. I'm good. Not that you're trying to pluck a GM from another organization. Two people who are not running their team, who are lieutenants where they are, looked at this, talked about this, and then came away saying, no, we're good. We're going to stay where we are. What? How bleak is that, I guess, is the question I'll start with.
I think that's pretty bleak, you know, especially when you think about how poorly the Nationals organization has performed over the last couple of years. Just as a comparison point, same sort of market, free agent market in terms of going after baseball personnel that can run your front office. They're not in a great spot. Obviously, they do have more talent, but we talked about the Nationals last week. It's not like, you know, it's so much talent. And it's just a matter of like the Cubs and, you know, a few years back, we got to like just kind of figure out how the pieces work together. Not necessarily one of those. And, you know, there's been some questions with ownership and resources there, but people seem to be tripping over themselves to go to Washington. You know, they drew some of the best front office personnel that's been, you know, hired up over the last couple of years. And I even had a conversation with a front office person that was talking about, hey, if you ever come across these guys from Boston that you used to run into from time to time, drop my name. I'd love to get an interview. So I think like the buzz around the Nationals is a really good comparison point for the Rockies because they can't even get somebody to take over the operation, which should really be the easy part because there's plenty.
There's only 30.
Yeah, there's plenty of incredibly driven, smart people in a variety of front offices that want to jump at the chance to be, you know, the president of baseball operations, a GM, to make those decisions and build an organization in their likeness. I think the issue is the last part there. I think the issue is that they're not allowing whoever's coming in, and it must have been a clear point that was made to both candidates, that neither was going to get the opportunity to bring their people in and run things their way. And, you know, it's funny when you think about that because you look at the Rockies and as an expansion team, their first 18 years as an organization starting in 1994 were a more successful run than their last 16 years, where they've had three winning records, and that's including the, you know, 2010, so 16 years back. Over the last 15, there's only been two. It was, you know, catching lightning in a bottle with Arenado and Story and some of that, you know, Blackman and some of that talent in 17 and 18. You know, since that point, this has been a below average franchise, a below 500 franchise, and things really bottomed out when I had initially taken over writing the Colorado Rockies system. God bless Jesus Cano, our coworker, who's taken over the Rockies coverage this year. Thank you, Jesus. They had never lost 100 games up to that point when I took it over in 2022. They've now lost 103, 101, and 119 games over the last three seasons. Their level of failure is actually kind of remarkable, you know, and I think that's a big part of it is if you're coming in, and we saw some comments to this when it was announced that this job would be opening up, that a lot of baseball people looked at this as a job where anything that you put in place is likely to be an improvement based on previous processes. So when you have people that look at this as a lower risk job in terms of your success points are probably a lot easier to achieve than if you take over a mid-tier sort of performing franchise. If you even have people that don't want to take those jobs, when the expectations for the Rockies are literally as low as they could possibly be, I really don't think that bodes very well for the future of the organization. Strange things happen. Baseball is a funny game, but I don't know if there's enough momentum to swing things in the other direction at this point.
Hey, we've told you about Huel's new Daily Greens ready to drink can, but also we do not want to forget about the OG.
Your favorite. You love that chocolate peanut butter flavor. I do. You and Kratz love that chocolate mm-hmm. peanut butter flavor.
That's so my favorite good. One.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
The breakdown.
The vanilla, also good. But when they sent me the chocolate peanut butter, oh, it's like a dessert, but it's not.
35 grams of protein, no added sugar, gluten-free for your boy, under $5 per meal because it's a meal and a drink. 6 grams of fiber, 27 essential vitamins and minerals. Huel makes healthy eating simple. They also just launched into Target stores nationwide. Try both products today with 15% off your purchase for new customers with the exclusive code FOUL. At Huel.com/foul. Use that code, fill out the post-checkout survey to help support FT. Get after it, FT fam.
Topic one is ownership is the biggest problem here. I don't know another way to explain it because this is the perfect embodiment of this. This is a team, this is an organization that knew they were making a change or knew that they were likely to make a change for months now. This is an organization where everything was clear, like the turnaround has to begin in this offseason by midseason, right? This is a team that at that point, the only question that remained for 2025 was, will this team have the worst record of all time or just one of the worst records of all time? And here we are. The offseason has begun now. There are now decisions being made that have to be made. We are 2 weeks away from setting 40-man rosters. We are at the point where free agency, you know, teams are, you know, players are filing. You have to decide who you're going to tender, non-tender. All of these decisions are things where all 30 organizations, the teams that are deep in the playoffs, often talk about how they've lost time. One challenge they have is if you are in the World Series, you are behind on your offseason planning because you can't turn that page until the World Series is over. Good problem to have. No one's going to begrudge the Dodgers or Blue Jays for that. But that's versus everyone else. You see, like you said, you mentioned the Nationals. The Nationals had this situation. Here they are. They have a team in place that, by the way, has a cohesiveness that has worked together, a group where it's like, okay, they are now pointed in one direction where Paul Tomoni has his team and off they go into the offseason. And here we are with the Rockies. The Rockies recently, you know, they placed a player on waivers recently who got claimed by multiple teams, from what I understand. And you're like, I don't even know who put him on waivers, to be honest. Like, I don't know why they put him on waivers, but I don't even know who put him on waivers. Like, because they really are in a situation here where they are now behind everyone else. And to go to what you said, I guess I've talked to people, you've talked to people who are like, this really is a fascinating opportunity for someone because of two things. One, the Rockies are a very challenging environment, but if you could be the one to crack that, that would be kind of the dream in some ways for like, whoa, this is the leadership group. This is the GM or the Pobo who figured out how to make Coors Field an asset rather than a detriment. That would be huge.
Yeah. And I think, you know, on the other side, when we look at, you know, ownership and we look at how they might be meddling, typically it's a matter of a clash of egos. And I think we talked about this when we talked about the ideal candidate for this job. I think there is a strong amount of ego that's almost needed to come in here and sort of laugh at the history of pitching in Coors Field and the lack of success for this team and some of the, you know, contributing factors, whether it be the altitude and how that impacts injuries and recovery and some of that stuff, breaking balls and movement on pitches, you know, having a way where you believe that you have the ability to hack that and figure that out. And we'll talk about that in more depth later on. But I think there's a certain amount of, you know, almost arrogance or ego that needs to exist. And you have to wonder if, because the way that ownership is hands-on in a bad way, not necessarily in a way like maybe a Steve Cohen is, at least perceptively at this, you know, at this point, at least perception's there at this point.
Steve Cohen's not making the decisions. He's saying, how big a check do I need to write?
Exactly. You know, and holding people accountable, that sort of thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But if you're getting involved in making baseball decisions, I think that's a problem. And, you know, I can't speak for the day-to-day operations there with Colorado. It's funny, at least even covering the team, I heard a lot less about how things function from them than I did from the Cardinals or the Astros or the Cubs or the Red Sox and some of these other teams that I've covered over the years. They're more than happy to give you an idea of, you know, what their mentality is toward player development and why they're doing the things that they're doing. I never had those conversations with folks in the Rockies front office when I was covering it. And, you know, you sort of have to wonder what the directive is from the top down and, you know, how ownership plays a part in all that, just in terms of investing in the technologies, investing in the people that have, you know, big picture ideas that can have a larger impact on the greater group of prospects. I think you look at teams that have been successful lately, particularly in the player development side, it's not just one guy. It's a lot of incremental improvement throughout each system. It's a very clear connection between the type of groceries that you shop for and the type of meals that your player development team wants to make, right? It's kind of going back to the old Bill Parcells thing, mm-hmm. where I almost wonder if there's some of that. If, you know, you want me to make the meal, or you should at least let me shop for the groceries, that I almost wonder how much of that is in there. And you have to, you know, I think it's Starling Monfort, correct?
Starling, yeah.
Starling Monfort is involved in scouting. So you have to wonder how much power he has to make decisions. Well, and that's certainly something that, you know, that's a very tricky game to play when it's the son of the owner, you know?
Right. It again, from every account I've had, like, he really diligent, works at it, all that. But at the same time, there is just the reality. It is just the overwhelming reality that that is someone who is, at the end of the day, unfireable. And there are not really, at the end of the day, real consequences for, in the same way that there is for anyone else, because you are the son of the owner. Like, that is a different level of power than anyone else who is coming in any way. And that kind of ties into the second point you want to make. You already hit on this a little bit, which is the way I would describe it is that if you rewound to like 2016, 2017, like you said, the last time that the Rockies were actually successful, they've had two winning records since 2010. Two of their, I think, eight best records of all time have been in the last 15 years. That's not a good trend. But if you said in 2016, if you said where the Rockies are, I would say that if this was kind of the baseline of development and technology and integration of all these different tools and all that, the Rockies were here. They were behind, but they weren't massively behind. And then I would say that in the last decade, I would say that technology, player development, analytical evaluation of players at the major and minor league level, biomechanics, sports science, all these things that you could talk about. It's now the baseline is here, I would say, like where it has grown so dramatically in the past decade, and the Rockies have stayed here, kind of basically is what I would say. So it's not as much that they've started, that they've really changed dramatically what they're doing. It's what's happened is they didn't change when everyone else did. And, you know, I would say that you probably had these conversations too, but I'm coming at some reporting when I say that. This is not speculation. Yeah. This is when it comes to kind of going next level with pitching evaluation for amateurs, going next level in how you develop players, the technological tools that you have to work with and all that. The Rockies were never cutting edge on this. I don't want to make it sound like that they, but they've gone from not, from kind of being like, okay, we're slightly behind, we're not cutting edge, we're not even second, you know, like we're not the early adopters, and we're not the ones who say, okay, I'm going to let someone spend the money, figure it out, and then we'll be right behind them. Because there are teams, I think, that do that somewhat. And actually, it is kind of a way that you can kind of stay caught up. Okay, hey, they're figured out something there. We're going to hire someone from there. Okay, now we're bringing in that tech. Boom. Now we're kind of caught up. All that. The Rockies have fallen further and further behind on this. And I would say that's where, like we talked about, that this is kind of almost appealing potentially to someone to come in. Because if ownership gave a new GM, Pobo, whatever, the real like blank sheet, hey, we understand we're behind. We're going to invest in technology. We're going to invest in people who are going to really kind of help ramp this up. There is no more low-hanging fruit out there in any organization. In most organizations at this point, I would say, if you came in and took over, you might be able to make a tweak here or a tweak there, but you're going to find that this is not when you think, if you're thinking about Moneyball the movie and you're thinking about, hey, teams didn't realize that on base percentage was really useful and kind of undervalued. We are now in a world where the margins that you find are so thin most of the time, and then get the Yankees became team sweeper at one point, right? And a year later, everyone else is team sweeper too. Cause it's like, oh, that works. We're going to adopt that too. When you look at this, it does feel like that the Rockies do have more room to grow here than anyone else, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's the biggest takeaway when I started really looking into this, you know, kind of researching for the podcast. And, you know, it's a repeated talking point that I don't think is true, but people talking about how bad the bottom of the MLB is now, of MLB. It's 2 days in a row I've said that now. Oh, my God.
My shoulders kind of,
I don't think I've ever written it that way, but you know, I needed the rhythm. It gave me like the extra like beat. And anyway, so in MLB, I think, yeah, but when you look at the White Sox and you look at the Rockies, things have developed over the last 5 or 6 years in terms of the influx of information and then our ability as individuals, whether it's just being able to look at things based on experience, or of course, with the assistance of machine learning, have been able to understand so many more details around what makes pitchers good, what makes hitters good, what their fingerprint is in terms of the types of things that they can become, right? From their underlying characteristics, whether that's, you know, how you release or spin a baseball, your length of your fingers, finger strength and grip strength, things like that. On the hitting side, kind of how your arms move and, like, you know, your motor, how much more projection might be there for power, et cetera. We've learned so much on that end of things. Teams across the board have access to all this stuff. They all have sports science departments that even the bad teams, even the teams that are, you know, effectively, you know, below 500, just barely every year, have a lot of that stuff now. They're still pretty good teams. And I think we see that in the playoffs. All these teams are really good. All these teams can play with everybody pretty much on any given day, even the even against the Dodgers, right? We just saw someone take the Dodgers to 7 games and almost beat them.
The holidays can sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has a host of unique, high-quality, and often handmade gifts, many of which are crafted by independent artists and small businesses. That attention to detail often means products are made in small batches, so the best finds can sell out fast, like the book of famous Dodgers newspaper clippings ordered on Uncommon Goods that I received as a birthday gift. It was a special present catered to my liking that can't be found anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard baseball fans like me, to foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're not only finding the best and most unique gifts for the people you care about, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice and have donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
The Rockies are multiple generations behind that I can't even say that it's Moneyball, you know, which is a term that's now used like for a catch-all by kind of, you know, random fans that saw the movie and don't understand analytics and how advanced it's gotten since those days. Yeah, they might be looking at that kind of stuff. It's very clear based on the feedback that we've gotten in reporting over the years. It's a very small, if non-existent, analytics department, and you have to question how much power and voice that analytics or that R&D people even have within the decision-making process within acquisition windows. That's really what the concern is. So I think when you look at that, and then there's no clear direction in terms of what they're bringing in and then what they're doing once they're in, there seems to be a very clear lack of development plans post-draft, whether it be for pitchers or it be for hitters. It's sort of, these are the guys we got. This is what they are. Let them go play. It's almost like you're simulating the minor leagues in MLB The Show and hoping that some of these guys pop and turn into big leaguers for you. Like, you have no insight into any of it, seems, or no ability to put, you know, coordinators in certain spots that are going to make guys better across the board. It just kind of seems like the guys that came in are all the same, you know, whether they leave the organization or eventually matriculate up to the majors. There's really nothing new. I never see, oh, this Rockies pitcher added this pitch or added multiple ticks of velocity year over year. And I mean, every organization does that. There's plenty of guys in the Angels. We complain about the Angels and knock them all the time, kind of as a collective in the baseball media space. They have guys every year that add velocity. I've seen positive traits and things happen with hitters in that organization. I feel like all the guys that they sign in the international market, and they've signed some good talented players in the international market, they never grow. There's never this growth in terms of approach. There's never adjustments in the swing, so this guy's backspinning the ball more clean. None of that stuff you see with any of these Rockies prospects. I mean, their best development story is, you know, Brenton Doyle figured out how to hit enough that all the tools finally clicked. You know, that's really their biggest win.
And when you say that's their biggest win, that kind of almost itself kind of comes with, I hate to say it, but a little bit of an asterisk, because while Brenton Doyle had an excellent 2024, he also hit 233, 274, 376 this past year, you know, and was basically a replacement level player. That's their win. Hunter Goodman, I would say. Hunter Goodman is their win. Hunter Goodman is a legitimate.
Right now, this year he is.
Yes. But that's where that ties into. We're going to get back to the hitters. But to go back to the pitchers, when I say invest in a pitching lab, I mean by this that you need to say, we are clean sheeting this. We are starting over and we are bringing in, again, it's not hard to find these days. We are bringing in someone who has worked, whether it is at a facility or with a club, who has a record of helping pitchers get better. Because to go back to what you said, the Rockies in the last decade, I just looked at top 100 picks. You could look at their whole draft, but I wanted top 100 picks. I'm saying these are the players that they targeted and said, these are our priority picks. They have taken 22 pitchers in the top 100 picks of the last 10 drafts. One has produced an ERA under 6 for the Rockies, which is Jaden Hill, who's been a new useful reliever for them. The others who have reached, Chase Dolander will see, like, I will say this. It's hard to say that Chase Dolander, like, he was a victim of Coors Field. He has a very good, solid ERA on the road, runs allowed on the road, and it is terrible at Coors Field. But he has a 6.52 ERA, career ERA. Then you've got Carson Palmquist, 8.91, McCade Brown, 7.36, Ryan Rollison, 7.02, Tommy Doyle, 8.31, Riley Pint, 22.09, Ben Bowden, 6.56. Those are all the pitchers who've made it to Colorado, top 100 picks in their last 10 drafts. And it is just, and the thing that also stands out about this is, you said it already, we are now in an era where you draft pitchers knowing this is what the pieces are now, but this is how we're going to improve them. Obviously, we could talk about Cam Schlittler and what the Yankees and Cam Schlittler did, where he went from being 90 to 92 in college a lot to now sitting at 99 and dominating in the postseason. But we could talk about Peyton Tolley with the, you know, with the Red Sox. We could talk about the Mariners and their gas camp and how many starters they have now who throw much harder, but also guys even like Logan Evans, who has reached, you know, is their number 6 starter this year, who was basically terrible in college and throws harder and better than he ever did in college. And then you look at the Rockies, and to just give a couple of examples of this, Brody Brecht, when he was at Iowa, was looked at as like, okay, there's some understandable risk here. He's a little wild. He's a two-way guy who's now focusing on pitching, but he's also a premium athlete who threw 98, 99 as a starter, touching 101. So you're like, okay, cool. This is a lot to work with. Breck sat 95 this year. Now, I know he needed to improve his control. I know that that's probably a little bit of a point of emphasis, understandably. But that's league average for a fastball velocity now, for a starter, for a right-handed starter. Touch 99. He used to touch 101 as a starter in college. Like, I know adjusting from 7, you know, to a more norm, a pro schedule, there's a lot of things that all tie into here. But okay, to take the other extreme, Sean Sullivan. When you draft Sean Sullivan, you are drafting Sean Sullivan, who was the 46th pick in the 2023 draft. You are drafting him saying, we like a lot of what we see here, but we're really ideally going to have to find an extra 2 to 3 ticks of velocity for him to really be the pitcher you want him to be. Sean Sullivan sat 90 and touched 95 in college, his draft year. So if you said, okay, we're going to have to take that 90 to 92, 93, but the fact that he touches 95 lets us think we can get there more consistently.
And it's Sean Sullivan's
87 touching 90 this year.
And I mean, some of that even seems generous. I saw 85 mile per hour fastballs, not this year, but last year, in a start in New Hampshire. You know, like it was legitimately 85 to 86 miles an hour. And he was out of the game in like the third inning because guys were just, they weren't teeing off on him, but they were driving his pitch count up because like every at bat went 7 or 8 pitches because he couldn't put anybody away. And guys were just fouling everything off hard, you know. And I kind of feel like that's, especially in Coors, that seems like a terrible combination. Like, that sounds like a recipe for disaster.
So you could look at those two drafts, like, so Sean Sullivan, Jack Mahoney, Gabriel Hughes, all three of those are not sitting at the velocity they were sitting at when they were drafted. And I know guys get injured, guys have to work through things, all that. But there's really, it's really hard to point to many examples of Rocky pitchers who are drafted, come in, and you're like, they really helped that guy get a lot better. And that's, I would say in 2025, that when we say like that, that's not the norm, that means you are way behind the curve, because every other organization almost, you can point to guys where you say, some of it is like, if you draft a 19-year-old, sometimes if you just stay out of the way, they'll do it. But organizations are really good nowadays at finding guys and saying, look, you're not using your legs the right way. Look, we got to get you on a strength program. Look at how you're disconnected here. We found this biomechanical flaw. We found, hey, if you change your takeaway, all these things, there are all these pitch doctors out there is the way I would describe it, who, and sometimes it's also the other thing you do not see with the Rockies the same way as you see with a lot of organizations is there are organizations like, hey, they almost like the pitch assortment is almost like they come to you with a platter of like options. And it's like, try this grip. Now try this, see this, because they're going to figure out what works best with you. Are you a pronator? Are you a supinator? What is going to help you get to the best that you can be? We don't have really many examples of that with the Rockies. And that's where this is, again, this is low hanging fruit. This is things that you don't have to be cutting edge in Major League Baseball to get improvement here. You just have to be mediocre at it would be a significant improvement, I would say.
A mid-major college program might actually be a good like goal for first year. Can you be as good at developing and identifying talent as a mid-major college program? Because it seems like some of them might be doing a better job, especially in the pitching development side.
So then we're going to go back to the hitters, though. And the other thing that just baffled me, I will tell a little story of how I got here. Speaking of, you said, Jesus Cano's working on our Rockies top 10. It'll be up top 30 after that, but our top 10 will be up at baseballamerica.com. couple of weeks after we post this, and he would put in their best defensive infielder. And it started with, and I, you know, like we're still going back and forth. We haven't finalized it yet, but it was Ethan Holliday. And that like was a needle scratch moment for me, because you can say a lot of things about Ethan Holliday, but he is a drafted shortstop who you would say that in an ideal world, maybe he still ends up being a shortstop when he reaches the majors. But realistically, he is not his brother's body. It is more of his father's body. Third base, corner outfield, first base. He's not like a plus defender. So then I started looking at it and said, well, there's got to be a better candidates here. And then you look at it and you realize like Jose Torres was playing a lot of shortstop for them. That's a minor league Rule 5 pick. You know, Ryan Ritter was their AAA shortstop much of the year. He doesn't qualify anymore. He graduated. But Ryan Ritter is one of the few guys that they've actually drafted as shortstops. And so I went back again, last 10 years, top 100 picks. And I know that that does leave off a couple of guys like Ryan Ritter now. But we're again saying this is where they spent their most draft capital. 2016, they drafted Garrett Hampson, 81st pick. That's a shortstop. 2019, 96 pick. So right in just under the cutoff of top 100, but Taren Vavra, who is really kind of a utility infielder type, but you can call him a shortstop. 2023, Cole Kerrig was a catcher, shortstop, center fielder. Take your pick, but we can say whatever we say. That is a athletic, up-the-middle player. And if you want to throw Ethan Holliday in there, you could say that Ethan Holliday, as you said, he's a shortstop now, probably going to be a corner down the road. That's it. Top 100 picks. And then if you say, okay, that's fewer than their first baseman they've drafted, because they've drafted Charlie Condon, who's playing first base, played a multiple position, but he was a corner outfielder right away, then moved to first base. Jared Thomas, who they're trying to play in corner outfield, but was a college first baseman. Michael Toglia, first baseman. Grant Levine, first baseman. That doesn't count the other corner outfielders like Jordan Beck, Zach Veen, Max Bleu. Like they've had, there's been such an emphasis on what I would describe as corner bats lacking in athleticism, whose power is better than their hit tools. And a little bit of that can be nice, but like, I do think that at the end of the day, overweighting towards that is a rough profile for really any organization, but especially if you're in Coors Field, where power is one thing that will kind of almost like grow organically a little bit because of the altitude. I know there's the humidor and all now, but the flip side of it is You need the athleticism to cover those big outfielder, you know, those big outfields as well. And it, that's the part of this, like the fact that the Rockies struggle to develop pitching, I do try to give them some real benefit of the doubt on, because it is Coors Field. But when the Rockies have the worst offense in baseball, arguably, when the Rockies are a 237, 293, 386 team as a whole, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, that's something where there is no such thing as a successful Rockies team ever that doesn't hit, because the one thing the Rockies should be able to do is mash. And by the way, when they've been good, they've mashed and played defense at the same, those two things. And this is a team that needs a talent infusion of athleticism up the middle, hit first, will develop the power, guys. Again, when we talk about player development, not that every player can develop power, but there are ways that you can help him develop this. There are bat speed programs. There are strength training. There are things you can do. It is, to be honest, in 2025, I would say that it is probably a little easier to do that than it is to take guys who aren't middle infielders and turn them into middle infielders. And the Rockies are not a team that's going to go out there and they're not going to say, we're going to, don't worry, we're going to bring in a premium free agent shortstop or a premium free agent center fielder. That's not really been their MO. When you look at it, is this, again, is this low hanging fruit for them?
Yeah, I think so. And I think some of it comes down to targeting the types of players that they're looking at, the types of athletes that they're looking at. You know, because a lot of the athletic testing, I think probably its most direct correlation to success, like immediately, at least in terms of the five tools, is defense. You're going to find better defensive outfielders. You're going to find better defensive infielders, you know, and hopefully guys that have a little bit more left in the tank when it comes to, you know, power projection, maybe some speed and kind of all that stuff that, that makes the game work. So I think that's probably, you know, an important place to look. But also probably trying to find some guys that have more developed hit tools. You know, it feels like they've never, like, despite the types of players they go after, they never seem, they maybe land a corner outfield bat with power. They never find the ones that have, you know, bat to ball ability and approach and kind of marry all that together. Usually you can find a few of those guys. They're not even all that hard to find. You don't even have to pay that much. And they've drafted within that grouping of like corner infielders and corner outfielders, but the types of players they're going after don't necessarily have as much upside as the guys that develop into everyday regulars in the big leagues.
I'll put it this way. We had our Stuff Plus ratings for organizations, the minor leagues, and our Hit Plus ratings over at baseballamerica.com. The Rockies are basically near the bottom when it comes to sliders, when it comes to sweepers, when it comes to curveballs, when it comes to fastball velocity. They're middle to back of the middle of the pack. You know, movement on fastballs. It really is, changeups are one thing that they're a little bit above average at. There's not a lot of things that really stand out at. The least surprising thing out there is that the Rockies are 30th in swing decisions across all 30 organizations. That was, if it had not been that, I'd have been surprised, because the profile, when you read Rockies, you know, when we're writing up Rockies prospects, as you've written up over the years, how many times is it that they need to do a better job of understanding the strike zone, that they need to do a better job of pitch recognition, that they need to marry the power that they have with better bat to ball skills, with better decision making? You know, there's something to that. Like, they're 25th in our Hit Plus overall rankings, which, again, is bad. That's bad, but it's especially bad when you consider how often they're drafting high, right? Like, the real, like, one of the giant problems here, to summarize it all, is this is an organization that, when it comes to acquiring talent, has had significant advantages in recent years. Yes, the lottery has changed it a little bit, but this is the team that is drafting high year after year after year. And they just have very few wins that you can point to. As you said, if you say right now, the This is a multi-year process. You know, we talked about the Nationals and we said, like, you could try to go for fast or you could try to go for, we're going to tear it back down and start again. The Rockies is a, I don't think there's any scenario where you're talking before 28 that this is a turnaround, because in a best case scenario, Hunter Goodman, Brenton Doyle, I don't know who else you're going to talk about among position players who you're saying is like a, again, not that there won't be other players who will still be on the team, you know, but there's not a whole lot of players that you could say, hey, this guy is going to be a key part, you know, Tovar, maybe, like, you hope, but pitching wise, Dolander, there's just so few pieces here, Seth Halverson, but there are so few pieces here where you say there are even, to go back to something else, not trying to pile on, but when you go back to ownership, that the fact that this team had talent like they did and almost time and time again, either let that talent walk in free agency for very modest compensation or held on to them so long, like in Nolan Arenado's case, did not trade him at peak value, re-signed him, then decided they didn't want him and then dumped him for very modest return. You know, in that's all gone now. It's just over and over. This is a team that it needs to almost do a 180 is the way I would say it. That's my summary. What is your summary for how to fix the Rockies?
Yeah, I think, you know, everything needs to change. You kind of got to tear it all down to the studs, rebuild everything from the ground up. And I think it's, you know, maybe not international. I do feel like they do find talent there. So maybe that's the one part of the organization to keep in place and be like, guys have established some relationships. You're good. You at least sign some decent players. And then really, really do hitting development, have a focus on that. I think there's probably easier, lower hanging fruit there, at least for immediate success with some upper minors guys in the big leagues, etc. Pitching might take a little more time, but I think you do need to build a pitching lab. I think you need to hire, you know, interesting and brave people. People who are willing to think a little bit outside the box and try things that aren't scared of failure. You know, I think a lot of it is going to come down to who you have running these different departments and then just figuring out, you know, how to stay out of the way as ownership and, you know, make sure that the communication is flowing between departments and that, you know, there's very clear directions for everybody from the top down.
It's going to be a mammoth task for whoever ends up getting this job and whenever that is, which again, that I will say the simplest thing to say is which when they say whoever and whenever, the whenever should have been a week ago. The whenever should have been, I don't mind if it's that the news leaks out, you know, because we're not going to make the official announcement till after the World Series is over. That's fine. But the offseason is here and there is no reason that the Rockies should need to take this long to fill a position that they knew that they needed to fill for quite a while. It is a tough time to be a Rockies fan. Hey, I will say this for Rockies fans. They are a loyal bunch. The number of people who come through the gates at Coors Field every year is remarkable considering where this team is right now. They deserve credit for that. I do hope for their sake that there will be a better team for them in the, let's say, mid to distant future, because again, it's going to be a long turnaround. I think we both agree. For Jeff Ponce, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everybody.